frightened or angry than he's letting on.
Please, Shady.
With agonizing effort, I make myself release the fiddle case. I push away the voice that says Cedar's just another person trying to get in my way. When I nod, his fingers relax against my wrist. Then I want to find the attic, I say.
All right,
he says.
All right.
It takes a long time for us to find the entrance to the attic, and we have to be quiet so we don't wake anyone. We check the ceilings and the walls, searching everywhere for the outline of a door beneath the plaster and wallpaper. Finally, Cedar thinks to push the heavy dresser in my old bedroom to one side. We pause to listen for Mama, in case we woke her up. But if she hears us, she stays in bed and pretends she doesn't. Then I run my hands along the wall, feeling for a place where the door should be. The wall is smooth, but I find a dip in the plaster. I trace it with my finger and wonder who sealed it closed, locking my family's secrets inside. After a half hour's quiet work, Cedar uncovers the attic door and pulls a heavy tape from around its edges, unsealing it for the first time in decades. Plaster and splintered wood litter the floor around it, and the wallpaper is torn around the edges. But it's there. An attic door just big enough for us to fit through. It doesn't have a doorknob, or even a latch. That must have been removed when it was sealed. Cedar pries his fingers into the edge, pulling at it. After a few moments, it pops open with an ominous creak. I swear, every ghost in the house sighs. With relief or fear, I can't tell. The light bulb doesn't come on when I pull the hanging string, so I send Cedar to the kitchen to get flashlights from a drawer by the stove. I stand waiting at the entrance, goosebumps covering my arms. I expect the air to feel cool and musty, like a forgotten library. But it's like most Florida attics. Hot, humid, and rank. My stomach feels sour, and my head slightly dizzy, like my body knows better than to climb these stairs and is trying to stop me. As I stare into the yawning blackness, the house seems to grow even quieter, the silence practically humming around me. I can't shake the feeling that I'm about to travel into the decayed, worm-eaten center of my family's secrets. And every ghost here knows it. But Cedar comes back with two flashlights, and I cross the threshold into the waiting, silent darkness. Once inside, we have to step more carefully, shining the flashlights down to find our way. The floor is rotten in places, hardly an inch of it stable. We cast our flashlights around the walls and ceiling, revealing old boxes, broken furniture, and forgotten tools.
I know it's just an attic, but it doesn't feel right,
Cedar says, his voice husky.
Let's do this fast.
We separate, shining our flashlights in different areas, searching through the jumble. For what, I don't know. What are we hoping to find here? A dead girl's body? After 20 minutes, our efforts turn up only junk. Old insurance papers, magazines, and ancient moldy clothes. Despite this, I sense that we'll find the answer I need here. The one that makes everything fall into place. We've looked through so many boxes and trunks that in my desperation, I'm starting to think of sneaking off to play the fiddle again. With a sigh, I pull out an unsealed cardboard box that once held bananas. At the bottom of a pile of dusty papers rests a heavy book, an old family photo album. I turn my flashlight on it and begin to turn the pages, my hope quickening. I don't recognize any of the faces. The pictures are old and yellowing, belonging to another time. But then, my flashlight illuminates a crumbling, water-stained family portrait of two parents with two young children. I recognize Daddy first, perhaps 10 years old. He's not smiling, just staring at the camera with deep brown eyes that look exactly like mine. Aunt Ina's next to him, maybe 6 or 7, smiling nervously. Their mother is thin and pretty, her hair feathery and strange, her clothes even worse. She seems familiar somehow, but it's the man in the portrait that stops my breath. Him.
What?
Cedar says, coming over to squint at the page.
He's the ghost that came to my room when I was little. He's younger here, but that was him. The first ghost I ever saw Daddy raise.
My vision goes spotty at the edges, and my fingers ache with a familiar pain.
Are you sure?
Cedar asks.
He seemed like a confused old man who'd lost his way.
I didn't understand why Daddy was so afraid. Why he cried. I look up at Cedar, but he's hardly more than a silhouette in the darkness. His face blue shadows. I touch his arm to make sure I'm still in this world. The ghost was my grandfather, my daddy's father. And Daddy was scared of him. Of course he was. What little bit I know about who he was in life would have made me afraid to meet his ghost. Cedar puts a protective hand on my lower back.
That's your dad there?
He asks, pointing at Daddy's face. Yes. And that's Aunt Ina. I shift the flashlight to get a closer look, searching her young face for clues of the woman she would grow up to be. Her head is tilted away from the rest of the family, as if she's leaning toward another person. I tilt the picture and gasp. Look, there was someone else here in the portrait. Cedar reaches a tentative finger and scratches at the paper. Part of the built-up residue flakes away, but the image is no clearer. Water stains and mold branch out from that side of the portrait, reaching hungry fingers toward the young family. It's like they're being eaten up by time. I don't know what the mildew is hiding, but I feel it in my gut. Know it as sure as I know the words to all the songs Daddy ever taught me. This is what made Daddy play the way he did. This is the reason for his dark moods and rages. This is the reason for everybody's pain. This little patch of mold-stained paper could answer all my questions. I fold the picture up and put it in my pocket, ignoring the unpleasantly damp smell it leaves on my fingers, the unnatural weight of it in my hands. Maybe it won't bring Jesse home, but it could help me lay some ghosts to rest. 26. I wait until dawn, when morning just begins to break over the horizon, casting pale shafts of light into my bedroom, illuminating the dusty dresser that we shoved back into place last night. Cedar is asleep beside me in bed, his hair sticking up like duck fluff. Mama would have a heart attack if she knew he slept the rest of the night in my bed. But all he did was hold me. All he did was help keep the darkness at bay. It was a late night, and he's not waking up anytime soon. So I tiptoe past him and out of the room, stepping carefully down the stairs and avoiding the creaky ones. He'll be mad I left without him, and put myself in danger without him there to protect me. But there are some things even cowboys can't protect you from. I grabbed my fiddle on the way out. I cut through the woods to get to Miss Patty's house, a half-mile walk from Ina's. She's the last person I want to talk to, but she's the only one who knew Daddy's family back then. The only one except Aunt Ina who can explain the picture I found in the attic. And Ina is too fragile right now for me to bother her with questions. Church music rumbles out of an open window, but not the nice kind of church music. It's repetitive and overly emotional, and all about blood and sacrifice. I have to knock 3 times before Miss Patty shuts it off and comes to the door. She peers out at me suspiciously. "Good morning," I say. Miss Patty opens the door all the way, but doesn't invite me in.
"Come to apologize,"
she says in her creaky voice. "For what?" I ask, even though I'm breaking about 30 Southern ideals by speaking to her that way, even if she is a bitter old hag. Miss Patty raises her eyebrows, and I gather up all my anger and stuff it into some dark pocket of my heart. I don't have time for it today. "Of course, Miss Patty. I apologize for being rude to you at Jim's funeral. It was an emotional day."
"Well, all right then. I wouldn't be a Christian woman if I didn't forgive even the worst of sinners."
I somehow manage not to roll my eyes as she steps back to let me in. She shuffles to the kitchen and turns on the light.
"Well, what is it? You're interrupting my praise time."
I pull the picture from my pocket and hand it to her. "I was wondering if you could please tell me about this picture. It's my daddy's family." Miss Patty puts on a pair of ancient reading glasses and peers at the picture for about 100 years.
"What about it?"
"Is there someone missing from it? There, beside my aunt?"
"Well, I don't see anyone."
Oh, I had forgotten about the other little girl."
A bolt of lightning runs through me. "What girl?"
"The other sister. The one who died so young. She broke her mama's heart. Wrecked that whole family. A wicked child."
A shiver starts working its way up my spine with tiny, chilly fingers. "What was her name?"
"I'm an old woman now. I forget so many things. But she was a terror, always into trouble, always driving her poor parents mad. No discipline could stop her. That's how she died. Up to some mischief or another, and it ended badly for her. When you invite the devil into your home, you shouldn't be surprised when—"
I try to bite down my impatience, but I can't help but interrupt. "You can't remember her name at all?" Miss Patty goes back to staring at the picture.
"Brenda? Belinda? Who can say?"
Was it Brandy? I hold my breath. Miss Patty snaps her wrinkled fingers.
"Brandy! Yes! What a child! Named after the devil's drink, no wonder, no wonder! A trashy name."
"Thank you," I say, before she can launch into another one of her evil speeches. I pull the picture from her hand. "Have a nice day," I add, rushing for the front door. Miss Patty is still muttering about the rudeness of wicked children when I close the door, collect my fiddle from the porch, and bolt back into the trees. She might have been able to tell me more, but I don't want to hear her warped version of my family's history. Brandy was Daddy and Aunt Ina's sister. A sister who died young. A sister whose name they never spoke. She's the source of all their guilt and their pain. She's the secret our family's been sinking into for 30 years or more. She's the next ghost I need to raise. When I'm out of hearing range of Miss Patty's, about halfway back to Aunt Ina's, I stop and lean against a pine tree. The ghosts whisper and stir around me, drawn by the presence of the fiddle. Is Brandy here too? Waiting for someone to help her? Waiting to tell someone what happened to her all those years ago? I'm about to unclasp Daddy's fiddle case when a twig snaps under someone's boot. I swing around, my heart in my throat. What the hell, Cedar? I say, automatically hiding the fiddle behind my back.
I could say the same to you.
There's no flirtation in his voice. No laugh on his lips.
You took off. With everything going on, you took off. And here you are. Out here with that fiddle again.
How did you even find me?
I've been hunting since I was 5. It wasn't any harder to track you than a deer.
When I don't say anything, he comes closer.
What are you doing, Shady?
I went to see this old neighbor of ours, to ask her about the picture. And I was right. There was someone else in it. Her name was Brandy. She was Daddy's sister. And she died when she was a kid.
Okay. That's really sad, but...
I just have this feeling like... Brandy's the answer to everything. To Jim and Jesse and Frank. To Daddy and this fiddle. Cedar's eyebrows knit.
That doesn't make sense. What could a girl who died decades ago have to do with Frank killing Jim?
I shake my head. Maybe nothing. But she's still important. There's something here. I feel it. A bone-deep knowing. A recognition. I have to know what happened to her.
So you came out here to raise her ghost? What about the Shadow Man?
Cedar's voice is strained and taut as a bowstring. You don't have to help me. You can go home. I turn away from his anger. Looking out into the trees, which are just beginning to glow golden with the early morning light. Cedar closes the distance between us in a few steps. He wraps his arms around me from behind and nuzzles his unshaven face against my neck. He sighs into my hair.
You really don't understand how this works, do you? I can't ever just go home again.
The part of me that has fallen for this rodeo boy melts a little. But there's another part of me, too. A part that is eaten up with grief and fear and darkness. That part of me has to fight the urge to run off into the trees by myself. To open the case and play the fiddle and raise Brandy alone. I want to. I want to so badly. But that's not what Daddy would want for me. To carry this burden all by myself. And I wouldn't have survived the Shadow Man last time if it weren't for my friends. If Cedar hadn't been there to call for help. If Sarah hadn't found a way to step inside the Shadow Man's darkness and break me free. So even though it about tears me in two, I take Cedar's hand and lead him back toward Aunt Ina's, ignoring the lure of the fiddle in its case. Let's call Sarah in Orlando, I say.
They're already at the house. I called them as soon as I knew you were gone. I knew you'd want Sarah there since last time she...
Cedar trails off, embarrassed. I guess it wasn't enough to call him my boyfriend and leave it at that. He needs to know that Sarah and I are done. That I'm not settling for him. Even a rodeo boy's ego has its limits. I stop him before we reach the front porch. Listen. Just in case I wasn't clear before about me and you, I made my choice. You're the right person for me. If you still want to be with me after all this is done, you're the one I want. The one I want to be with. My mind's made up and I won't change it again. Cedar meets my eyes.
You're sure?
When I nod, he breaks into a toothy smile that makes the fiddle in my grip and the secret in my pocket feel just a little bit lighter. He catches my cheek in one gentle hand, running a calloused thumb over my bottom lip.
I swear to God, Shady Grove, if that devil comes sneaking around here again, I'll knock him back to hell myself.
And then he kisses me good and thoroughly, just in case I don't believe him. When I finally open the front door, there's a huge clatter coming from the kitchen. There's no sign of Mama, Honey, or Aunt Ina, but our entire band is sitting at the table, eating cereal. Orlando is doing one of Aunt Ina's crossword puzzles, tapping a mechanical pencil against his chin. Well, help yourselves, I say. Rose mumbles something unintelligible around a mouthful of raisin bran, but I suspect it's as crass and rude as usual. She's sitting next to Sarah, who shrugs at me with a half smile. Where's Mama and Honey? I ask.
Your mom said to tell you she'll be back to pick you up this afternoon,
Kenneth says. That little bit of happiness I just found with Cedar on the front porch evaporates in an instant. Why are you here? Kenneth flinches and rises from the table, his face red.
Shady.
Did you know all along it was Frank? I ask, ready to punch his stupid face. Were you covering up for him?
Can we talk in private?
Kenneth asks, gesturing me toward the living room. I stomp ahead of him and wait just outside of the kitchen. Kenneth shuts the door, but everyone can probably still hear us. Not that I care. I've got nothing to hide. Kenneth faces me.
We still don't know for sure it was Uncle Frank. You don't really have any proof,
Kenneth says, crossing his arms over his chest.
I'm sorry, but you don't.
Are you kidding me? He's being haunted by your daddy, and he threw a fucking glass bowl at my head. I could have died trying to get away from him.
He's my uncle. He's my stepdad's best friend, Kenneth says. He never did anything to hurt me. He always tried to make Dad be better to me. He was always a good man.
True pain makes his voice crack. If Frank goes to prison, Kenneth will lose a father and an uncle all at once. But I don't have time for Kenneth's pain. Not when my brother's life is on the line. Not when all our lives are. You knew, I say, fuming. You knew he was involved in Jim's death all this time. I thought you were hiding something, but I didn't think it was something that big. Of course I didn't know. It was my daddy who got killed, Kenneth says, anger making his cheeks go even redder. But you were hiding something, I say. Something that proves Frank could have done it. Kenneth bites the inside of his cheek.
I saw his truck coming into the construction site when I was leaving that morning. But I didn't have any reason to think he killed my dad. And my stepdad said to leave it alone. I wouldn't say I saw Frank. And he wouldn't say he saw me.
And you didn't think there was anything wrong with that? You thought lying was the right way to respond to your daddy's death? Kenneth stares at the floor, his anger giving way to shame. He should be ashamed. If you'd been honest, Frank would have been investigated. That could have changed everything. He might be in jail right now instead of Jesse. I wouldn't have these stitches in my forehead, and my aunt, I point angrily toward her room, wouldn't be lying in there with a concussion.
I'm sorry,
Kenneth whispers.
Give him a break, Shady,
Rose calls from the kitchen. So they've all definitely been listening in.
He just found out his dad was killed, and his stepdad's an asshole.
I guess her protectiveness extends past Cedar and Sarah.
He is,
Kenneth says, finally finding the courage to look at me. And I've felt weird about it for a long time. When you said you were raising my dad's ghost, I was so scared of what he'd think of me.
Of what a coward I am.
How I let my stepdad push me around. You're not a coward, I say, all my anger used up. Staying mad at Kenneth won't help anything. And I did accuse him of murdering his own dad. It's all right. Let's just forget about it. Kenneth's face fills with relief, and he starts toward me, prepared to give me the same bear hug I saw him give Cedar at Jim's funeral. How did I ever think this goofball could hit Jim with a hammer? He can barely hold a grudge for more than half an hour. Fractured rib, I warn him, before he can get his paws all the way around me. He gives me a small hug, and we head back into the kitchen, where everyone looks at us expectantly. We're good, I tell them. Rose pumps her fist, and Cedar smiles, clearly relieved that his best friend and his girlfriend are done fighting. I look around the table again. Wait. Do you guys all know why you're here?
We're here for the ghost raising,
Kenneth says. And then he goes back to his seat and slurps up more Cheerios as if we didn't just enact a scene from a soap opera, as if we're not about to enact one from a horror movie. I wrap my arms around myself. You understand how dangerous this is, right? None of you should feel like you have to be here.
Do I look like I'd do anything for you I didn't want to?
Rose asks. We're helping you, okay? Sarah says, side-eyeing Rose. We're your friends, and we're helping you. So just shut up and let us. Orlando leans down and rummages under his chair, then drops a small bag on the table. He pulls sea salt and a bundle of sage from it. I didn't tell my abuela what we're up to, because she would skin me alive, but I asked her some questions about ghosts, and she said these are used for protection from spirits. Maybe they'll protect us against the Shadow Man. Orlando gives me a sheepish smile. I drop into the chair next to him and put my head on his shoulder, wrapping my arms around his bicep. Thank you, is all I can say, amazed that he's willing to meddle in the supernatural for my sake. He lays his head against mine, and I feel like maybe we're all going to make it out of this all right. After breakfast, we trudge up the stairs to my bedroom. Sarah sits in my old rocker again, reminding me of the last time we were here and how badly I wanted her. It was only a few weeks ago, but it feels like years. That desire for her is still there. But what I have with Cedar is lessening it to hardly more than a dull ache. Besides, as much as I hate to admit it, Orlando was probably right. Sarah and I weren't ever going to happen. But my longing for Daddy's fiddle, the longing to put my fingers on its strings and draw the music out of it, feels almost overwhelming. Despite the damage it can do, what it's already done to me, it's a part of me now, and I need it. When I pull the instrument from its case, everyone eyes it warily. Orlando sighs and begins scattering the salt in a circle around us. He burns the sage bundle and waves it around, spreading the acrid smell throughout the room. He circles me with the sage, and I notice he's wearing the Asabachi bracelet his grandmother gave him when he was little. He's always kept it on his bedpost, but now the jet black stone catches the overhead light, promising protection. I tune my fiddle quickly and carefully and wait for the others to finish tuning too. "The Twa sisters," I say automatically, and Sarah groans. Rose elbows her in the side, and Sarah smirks. All that autumn leaf fragility between them has turned to something new. Something like springtime.
"Try to stay with us,"
Cedar says, his eyes worried.
"Don't go off on your own."
He turns to the others.
"No one stop playing, no matter what."
I nod and begin to play, concentrating on the instruments around me. I feel us sync up, as if we share a single heartbeat. The ghosts, who were so still last night, so hushed, seem to perk up. I can feel them swarming around me, hoping for release. But I push them away and focus on Brandy. I focus all my thoughts onto a little blonde-haired girl. But when I open my eyes, the ghost who stands before me isn't Brandy. It's the woman whose ghost I raised in the pine woods, who sang a snatch of song with me. I understand now why she looks like regret distilled into human form. She's the woman from the picture. Brandy's mother. My grandmother, who died before I was born. She's older and sadder now, middle-aged, her brown hair turning gray, her face prematurely wrinkled. Her eyes are hollow and empty, her mouth hard. She radiates loneliness and longing. The ghost stares at me vaguely until her eyes catch on the fiddle.
"Is that Williams?"
she asks.
"Williams fiddle? Who are you?"
She doesn't remember me from the woods, from before. She's lost, drifting through this world like a plastic bag on the wind. I shouldn't be able to hear her over so many instruments, but her voice penetrates the noise, as if coming from inside me. "Where's Brandy?" I ask, ignoring her questions. "I wanted Brandy."
"William made that fiddle, you know,"
she says absently.
"I never heard anything so beautiful."
"No, you gave it to him. It was your ancestors." She shakes her head.
"Brandy had a lovely voice, too. She sang like a nightingale. But he took her voice. He took everything from her."
"Daddy," I say, a pit of ice forming in my stomach. It's an awful thought, but it would explain his dark moods, his guilt.
"He finally got what he deserved,"
she says, as if I hadn't spoken.
"If only I'd lived to see it."
Are all ghosts incapable of giving a straightforward answer? Is this some maddening condition of the spirit world?
"I never did, though. I never got what this world owed me."
She shakes her head.
"I should have stopped him. I should have."
She grabs her throat, The words strangled there. Darkness pulls around us like tar. Her eyes grow wide with terror.
I should have.
I'm still playing strong, but she begins to fade as darkness fills the room. A distant buzzing reaches my ears, pulling my eyes from her transparent face. By the time I look up, it's too late. The wasps are already flying out of the fireplace and swirling around us. They pour down the chimney and over the hearth like a funnel of darkness, their wings whirring the air. They flit and dive in circles around my room, flying faster and faster around my head. The sound of their wings as sharp as their stingers. Around me, my bandmates falter at their instruments, duck in to cover their heads. Their startled cries and screams fill the room. I drop the fiddle, cutting off the music before the shadows can get hold of me. And then I curl into a ball and cover my head against the encroaching darkness. I won't let the shadow man take my voice this time. I scream like my voice is a tornado that will pick the wasps out of the air and toss them into another state. I scream all the rage and grief that's taken up residence in my bones. It pours out of my marrow and into my blood and is pumped through my heart straight into my voice. When I finally stop screaming and open my eyes, morning light floods the room, and dead wasps lie so thick you can barely see the floorboards. Cedar kneels next to me, eyes wide. Kenneth right beside him. Orlando sits up and blinks like an owl, stunned. Sarah and Rose cling to each other, their arms around each other's necks, their faces pressed together.
Holy shit,
Kenneth says. He turns to Orlando.
Good salt, man,
he adds.
Thank you, abuelita,
Orlando whispers. After we make sure everyone is okay, we all file back down the stairs together into the living room. Everyone's talking, but my head is too full to follow their conversation or answer their questions, so I wander off to the kitchen. Meeting my grandmother's ghost again has unsettled me and raised even more questions I don't have answers to. I'm definitely not hungry, but I pour myself a glass of orange juice and sit at the table, staring at the violet wallpaper pattern over the kitchen sink, and thinking about what I'm going to do next. Hey, Sarah says from the doorway. Can I come in? I nod, and she sits in the chair next to me. Silence pools between us. But it feels restful now. Like we're finally going to be able to be real friends again. So Rose, huh? I say, startling her. It hurts. But the hurt doesn't make it to my voice. Sarah almost smiles, but she's holding back. Are you mad? I shake my head. How could I be? I'm dating Cedar. But I wish you'd talked to me. You said we'd talk that night at the construction site. But then you disappeared on me again. She fiddles with the lid on a plastic jar of honey shaped like a bear. I know. I'm sorry. I didn't know what to say. Anything would have been good. One single word. Sarah looks up. I do care about you. And I did. I do. Have feelings for you, but... But I'm not Rose. It's not that. I mean, yeah, I've always been hung up on Rose, but it wasn't because of her. And why? Why wouldn't you ever trust me? Why wouldn't you let me in? Because I knew I'd let you down, Sarah says.
I'd never be enough for you. I'd never be able to be there for you the way you need. We're just not right for each other. No matter how much we like each other, sometimes it's not enough to want to be together. You need someone like Cedar. And you need someone like Rose? I ask, holding her eyes. Sarah sighs. Maybe. I don't know yet. But you did help me. I thought I'd never be able to let anyone in again. And maybe I still haven't. But you made me feel like I can. Like I need to. None of this is what I wanted to hear. But at least Sarah's finally talking. At least she's finally opening up and telling the truth. At least I can have some closure. Are you happy? With Cedar, I mean? I know everything else right now is crazy, but is he making it better? Yeah, I say. He is. She nods and gets up to go. When she's at the doorway, I call her name and she turns. I know you're scared to lose people after your mom, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm always going to be there for you. I know, she says. And then she heads back into the living room, where Rose is probably waiting on pins and needles. And that's the end of Sarah and me. Of whatever lingering dream of us I'd held on to in the back of my mind. Alma Cedar. And she's probably going to be with Rose. Or with someone else who isn't me. I know deep down that it's for the best. But it still hurt a little to hear her say it. To have the truth laid bare. I wish that was the hardest conversation I would need to have today. But there's one more waiting for me. 27. After I convince everyone except Cedar to go home, I make my way to the guest room on the first floor. And Ina lies propped up on pillows, staring out the window. She looks awful. Bandaged cuts cover her pale face. Her hair still has bits of glass in it, which catch the light like crystals. She turns worried eyes on me. What happened? I heard all the noise. I felt. I would have come, but... She gestures to her pitiful form. But I know that's not why she didn't come. How are you? I ask, forcing myself to be patient and gentle, when all I really want to do is shake the truth out of her. I'll be fine. Just got my head knocked around a little. Her voice is finally normal, and she is firmly in our world, in the present, if unwillingly. It'll heal. I finger the hem of my shirt, unsure how to begin. Come here, she orders. I sit at the foot of her bed, and she runs her eyes over me, searching for injuries. Lucky girl. We're both lucky, I guess. She's speaking of the accident, but I'm not. It feels cruel to do it, but I ask anyway. Aunt Ina, what happened to Brandy? She blinks at me for a few seconds. Hmm? All this family secrets almost got us killed. Isn't it time to tell the truth? What happened to your sister? Aunt Ina blanches. That's... How did you? Just tell me, please. I've already figured out most of it anyway. I pull out the creased picture and place it in her lap.
I know it's painful for you to talk about it. And I can't imagine what it was like for you to lose her. But I'm losing Jesse. I'm losing my brother, and I can't seem to do anything about it. Nothing I do is helping. Maybe somehow Brandy can. Ina gazes down at the portrait, pain filling her eyes. She touches the moldy growth that obscures Brandy's form. She looks like it nearly kills her to do it, but she finally speaks. Brandy was my little sister. Our little sister. Mine and Will's. What happened to her? Please don't make me shady, Aunt Ina says, meeting my eyes. Please. It will destroy me. It won't, Aunt Ina. Maybe it will help you. All this family ever does is bury its secrets, and yet they keep climbing out of the dirt and sneaking up on us. Maybe if we just dig them up and face them, they can't hurt us all so much. Maybe if we speak them out loud, they won't have so much power over us. Aunt Ina squeezes her eyes shut tight, but a tear escapes and rolls down her cheek. She was allergic to wasps. That's how she died? I say so quietly, I'm not sure Ina hears me. But then she nods. That's what killed her, yes. But not who. Who was it? I ask, my heart constricting. But she looks away, not speaking. Was it Daddy? Aunt Ina startles. No, of course not. Not your Daddy. I hear the emphasis on your, slight, but there. Who is yours? I say. Your Daddy. She nods, the tears spilling from both eyes now. A fear as old as this house twists her features as she looks up at the ceiling. But she takes a deep breath and goes on. He used to lock us up there when we were bad. In the attic. When you were bad? Aunt Ina stares ahead, not seeing anything. Or maybe seeing a whole lot I can't. When we got in fights or broke things. Childish stuff. The day Brandy stole some cookies from the cabinet for our tea party. She didn't ask. And he locked her up there? God, for taking cookies. What else might a parent like that do? It's too horrible to think about. Mama might have slapped my hand once or twice, but I never even got spanked when I was little. Jesse didn't either, no matter how much he misbehaved. Even that time he got caught playing with matches. All Daddy did was send him to his room. Aunt Ina nods. When we heard Brandy screaming, he said she was acting out. We didn't know there were wasps up there. But then when she went quiet, Aunt Ina can't go on. Why didn't you or Daddy ever tell us? I ask, a tremor starting deep inside me. This house was my home. The place where I was loved. I had no idea it held so much trauma. Aunt Ina wipes her eyes. Some stories hurt too much to tell. What happened to your father? I can't call him her daddy now. He's not worthy of the name. She sighs. He went to prison. He died before they let him out. Another prisoner stabbed him. But Mama died first. I think at least partly of grief.
She was never the same after. And Will and I stayed here to be close to Brandy. Is that why the fiddle meant so much to Daddy? Because of Brandy? He wanted to see her again? That was a lot of it, I think. She says vaguely, non-committal. Then she's quiet for a while, as if she's steeling herself. What else could be left to tell after this? I think I know. How did Daddy really get the fiddle? It wasn't from your mother, was it? She wrings her hands over the covers.
He came home with the wood for it the night Brandy died. Later on, he had a luthier make the fiddle special for him. But he's the one who made it what it is.
How?
I don't know exactly.
Aunt Ina, I prompt. She shakes her head.
Grief. Guilt. Longing. He played it until it started bringing the ghosts to life. And then he kept on playing. Found a purpose in it. Well, at first. But later, I don't think he could help himself. He was bound to it somehow. He always meant for you to have it once he was gone. But Jesse was determined to keep you from it.
That's why grief makes the fiddle do its magic, I realize. It's a fiddle made of grief. Did Jesse know Daddy made the fiddle? Aunt Ina shakes her head.
No, I don't think so. I never told him. Will didn't want you kids to know. He wanted you to love music.
It's no harder to believe Daddy's grief made our fiddle than it is to believe our Irish ancestors gave it ghost-raising magic. I know how powerful grief is. I've felt it pound through my body like ocean waves, leaving me half-drowned. Of course grief could shape a fiddle into an instrument for summoning the dead. Of course the player's grief could make it stronger. That doesn't surprise me one bit. But that Daddy would lie to me like this. That he would draw me into his grief and make it my responsibility. I've never felt sorry for Daddy before. He always seemed so far above all that. But now I do. I feel pity for him. Which is not a way a girl ever wants to feel about her father. I've held this perfect image of him for the last 4 years, an unbreakable source of comfort and support, this deep and unshakable knowing, and it's starting to crack right down the middle. Let's go for a walk, I tell Cedar when I leave Aunt Ina's room.
What did she say?
He asks, jumping up from the couch. But when I shake my head, he follows me onto the front porch. I need to move. Need to feel the ground under my feet. I grab Cedar's hand and lead him around the back of the house and into the woods. I can feel him practically vibrating with questions. But he doesn't ask a single one. Instead, he laces his fingers in mine and follows me through the dark woods. As if I'm leading him down a beach instead of into a haunted forest. We walk in silence, the pine needles soft and spongy under our feet, shafts of sunlight illuminating patches of moss across the forest floor. There are no birds singing, no squirrels leaping from tree to tree. The woods are empty and hushed, waiting. Every ghost for 10 miles is holding its breath. I want to scream my rage into the silent trees
and I want to fall to the earth and ask it to hold me. I want to cut down every tree in this forest and burn down the house that is the woods' beating heart. I want to... I snatch up an old limb from the ground and slam it into the nearest tree as hard as I can. The shock reverberates up my arm, and I feel it in my teeth. I hit the tree again and again until the limb snaps. I sink to my knees and let the emotions well up and then surge out of my body, leaving me shaken and weak. My fractured rib aches and makes my breath come short.
Shady,
Cedar croons, touching my back.
What's wrong?
Jesse is in jail, and Frank is out free. And I can't do anything about it, I say. My words barely coherent. And my daddy was a liar. And so is pretty much everyone else I love. I break down weeping again. The hurt of it too much for words. My family's history is a dark stream that flows through my veins. I can't escape it. It's as much a part of me as my DNA. Is that all we're here for? To hurt and then to die? And despite everything I've learned, despite the Shadow Man and the wasps, I still want to play Daddy's fiddle. I need it. The depth of that need scares me worse than anything. Jim was right about me. I'm my daddy all the way through.
28. When we get back to Aunt Ina's, Mama and Honey are there.
Where have you been?
Mama says, her voice frantic. She clutches her cell phone tightly in one fist. We went for a walk. What's wrong? She squeezes Honey to her chest.
I called Frank this morning.
Why? I ask, startled. To give him a piece of my mind.
You don't treat my child like that,
Mama says, her anger flaring up for a moment. Mama has always defended Jesse and me against the slightest offense, like a bear when her cubs are threatened. But this time, I wish she hadn't.
You knew he was dangerous, I say, exasperated. What if he comes looking for us?
I thought you were exaggerating, Mama admits.
I'm sorry, baby.
We'll stay here at Ina's.
He'll probably just come here next, since she was with me yesterday, I fret. What did you say to him? What did he say?
I ask, my panic rising. She shakes her head.
Something is wrong with him. He's not right in the head. When I think how close you were yesterday to...
But a sob escapes her throat, and she can't go on.
I did what you wanted and called the police. I told them he threatened you and that I thought he was unhinged.
They didn't take it seriously. I'm still not sure Frank had anything to do with Jim's death, but I don't feel safe having you out here away from me right now. Not with Frank wandering around like that. She turns to Cedar.
You can't leave her alone. Promise me you'll watch out for her.
Yes, ma'am,
he says, and puts an arm around me. I shake him off.
We can't wait around. We have to do something, I say, my whole body trembling. I'm sick to death of crying and waiting and talking.
Here, take your sister, she says, handing Honey over to me. I wrap my arms around her and feel our hearts beating together. And I wonder if this is how Aunt Ina felt about Brandy. But Honey's restless now and slithers out of my arms to the floor and shoots into the room where Aunt Ina's sleeping.
Come on,
Cedar says, pulling me toward the kitchen.
I'll make you and Honey some lunch. You'll feel better after you eat.
But then Mama cries out, and by the time we turn around, Frank is already barreling through the front door, just like I knew he would. We should have left here the moment Mama told me she called him. Call 911! Mama yells, and Cedar has his phone out of his pocket before I can even think to reach for mine. Shady, take Honey upstairs! Now! I start across the room to find Honey, but Frank's screams stop my feet.
I'm going to kill them all, Jim. Is that what you want? You want your whole family dead?
He pulls a black handgun from his waistband and points it at Mama.
I'm going to kill them all.
Shady, go! Mama yells again, staggering away from Frank.
No, you stay, girl.
He yells, pointing the gun at me. Cedar leaps in front of me, still frantically speaking into his phone.
Hang up that phone right now,
Frank growls, pointing the gun at Cedar. His eyes are bloodshot and wild, scanning the room frantically. He looks like he hasn't slept in days, weeks even. Cedar puts the phone in his pocket and backs me toward the kitchen.
Stay right there!
Frank screams. This isn't the same man I saw yesterday. Yesterday, he was half mad from being haunted. But now he's lost, practically a ghost himself. A motion out of the corner of my eye catches my attention at the same moment it catches Frank's. He swivels the gun, pointing it at Honey and Aunt Ina. And a wave of terror washes over me.
Your baby girl, Jim. Your baby girl, is that what you want?
Mama runs past Frank, heedless of his gun. She snatches Honey up into her arms. Get out of here, Frank! Right now! She says, her voice shaking hard. She stands next to me, pulling Aunt Ina beside her. Mama doesn't understand why this is happening. She has always managed to ignore the ghostly parts of our family. But Aunt Ina knows how much danger we're in. Her eyes look like a rearing horse's, the whites showing bright. Frank settles his gaze on me again.
Shady, go get your fiddle. I want Jim to watch me kill you all, and I want to see his face while I do it.
I don't need to be told twice. I race up to my bedroom and pull the case out from under the bed. Luckily, Frank doesn't know what he's asking. This fiddle is the closest thing I have to a weapon right now. I run back down the stairs so fast I stumble on the last step and nearly pitch into the wall. Back in the living room, I rip the case open and pull out the fiddle.
Play,
roars Frank.
Isn't that what you threatened me with? My brother's ghost? Bring him then.
Mama's eyes grow wide. She grips Honey to her chest and watches me in silent confusion. Aunt Ina backs against the wall and slides down it, hiding her face in her hands. Cedar drops to his knees beside me.
Shady, you can't do this.
He's going to kill us all if I don't, I hiss back, my hands shaking as I tune the instrument.
Play!
Frank screams. For good measure, he fires into the wall behind my head. Honey yelps and begins to wail. Mama puts her palm over Honey's mouth and shushes her. My hands are trembling so hard I can barely hold the bow. But I have no choice but to play. I play Omi Wise again, since it worked the first time I raised Jim's ghost. The notes come out crooked and shrill, but loud enough to drown out Honey's cries. But as I play, I grow more confident, pouring my fear and rage and shame into the fiddle. It melds to my emotions like melted plastic, and I lose track of the difference between wood and skin. I close my eyes and forget about Frank and Cedar and Mama and even Honey. Focusing all my thoughts on the grief that can draw Jim back to our world. He's already here anyway. So clear in Frank's mind, he hardly even needs my urging. But then, Mama gasps, and I open my eyes to see Jim standing in the middle of the room, arms loose at his sides, jaw set. Frank cries out at the sight of his brother, the sound something between an exclamation and a plea.
Please, Jim. Please.
Frank says, dropping to his knees.
Forgive me. Forgive me, Jim.
Mama looks at me sharply, and I nod. I was sure before, but now she knows too.
It was that little bastard's fault,
Frank says, his voice hardly more than a sob.
It was him. He told me you were sleeping with Marlene. He said he saw you together. That was the final straw. After all you've done, after all you've cost me.
Damn it, Jesse. That's what this is all about. Jesse's stupid lies.
Why would I sleep with your wife?
Jim says, standing over him, arms crossed over his chest. He looks more threatening than he ever did in life, like his anger has given him weight and power.
Why would I do that?
Frank's face turns from fear to rage again, in the blink of an eye.
You slept with Shirley, didn't you? Right under your best friend's nose? And you were always looking for a way to hurt me. It wasn't enough for you to be a lazy drunk who got Daddy killed. It wasn't enough for you to be so sorry and so useless you couldn't watch him for one day. Make sure he didn't choke on his own vomit for one goddamned fucking day. I made a mistake, and you never let me forget it. I made one mistake.
Jim says.
A mistake? A mistake?
Frank bellows.
He died alone and in pain and probably terrified. And yet Mama forgave you. Mama made me try to forgive you. But you knew I never could. You spent your whole life looking for a reason to hate me, Frank.
Daddy's death just gave you cause.
But you got your revenge, didn't you? You bashed my brains in. Aren't you happy now?
Frank's face twists in despair.
Why else did you stick around? You wanted me to hurt you. I know you did. I didn't pay you shit. I gave you all the worst jobs, but you stayed.
Frank glares up at his dead brother.
You son of a bitch, why did you stay?
He roars.
You knew I was going to kill you one day. You knew it.
Jim shakes his head.
Even this you're blaming on me.
Mama lets out an anguished sob, and Jim glances at her, regret in his eyes.
I'm sorry, Shirley.
Honey holds out a hand toward him, her expression lost and frightened. Her lips form the word, Daddy, but I don't hear it over the fiddle.
Turn Honey away from this. Don't let her see.
Jim stares at Mama until she turns around, hiding Honey's face against her chest. Jim returns his eyes to Frank, and there is no pity in his ghostly gaze. There is only triumph. Frank was right. Jim has been waiting for this, even if he had to die for it to happen. There's so much to people we never see, never even guess at.
You know why I stayed,
Jim says, his voice terrible.
I stayed because after all those years of torment, all those years of being kicked like a dog, I wanted the whole damn town to see you for what you are. I wanted them to see you for the hateful, jealous, spiteful bastard that you are. I knew you would show your true colors eventually. Though, of course, I didn't know it would be because you killed me.
He chuckles darkly, running a hand over his stubble.
And it was worth it. It was worth having my head bashed in to spend these weeks haunting you, tormenting you, the way you've been torturing me all my life.
Frank raises the gun and points it at Jim, the rest of us forgotten. Jim laughs.
You can't kill me now. But you know what you can do with that gun? You can turn it around and put an end to this. Shady was right when she told you I'll never leave you be. I won't. I'll haunt you until you can't sleep or shit or eat or do anything without hearing my voice in your head.
The distant scream of sirens floats in over my music, and every head turns toward the windows. Red and blue lights flash from the road. What about Jesse? I ask, hoping to distract Jim and Frank until the police arrive. No matter what Frank has done, I don't want to see him shoot himself. I don't want Honey to go through that, or any of us. Jim ignores me, so I pitch my voice louder. You were willing to sacrifice Jesse for your hate, too? Jim doesn't even look at me. His eyes are locked on Frank's with a fervent gleam.
I already told you your brother deserved jail, Shady,
Jim says.
I'm the second person that little shit has gotten killed. But even so, hell yes, I'd sacrifice him.
My blood runs cold. Jim doesn't have any reason to lie. Frank is completely in his power.
Do it now. Do it before they get you,
Jim says as the police cars speed down the driveway. He puts his hand on the gun and begins to turn it toward his brother's face. This is what evil is. Not some unnatural force, not demons or devils. It's this right here. A man clinging so hard to hate it's worth dying for. Worth risking the lives of his wife and his child. Worth seeing a bullet fly into his brother's brain. Worth everything. As if in answer to my thoughts, I feel the shadow man slithering around me again, insatiable, eating up my fear and anger with a hunger so big the whole world's pain couldn't feel it. I recognize him now. I know who he is. But I'm powerless against him. Like Jim, I'll risk anything. I'll offer up anything in this world to keep playing my daddy's fiddle. I'll offer up myself.
Yes, play. Play on.
The shadow man whispers, his voice filled with malicious glee. I do, pouring every ounce of agony I feel into the song. Jim bears down on Frank with merciless hands, bringing the gun only a few inches away from his brother's sweating, anguished face. Frank's arms tremble with the effort to hold the gun steady. Why are the police taking so long? I squeeze my eyes shut tight and wait for the sound of a bullet. Instead, I hear a honey gravel voice that pierces straight to my heart. It's right close in my ear.